Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave Pruger. I'm happy to have you here and excited about our collaboration in this subject for the next four Mondays. You may have seen I sent around an email asking you two questions. If we were to sit down right now face-to-face, what's the most important question that you would like to ask about this subject area? And secondly, 4 weeks from now, if you walk away from this experience saying it's one of the best seminars, the most useful you've ever had, what would you walk away with? And I appreciate some of you sending me answers by email, and I welcome each of you sending me that. It's helpful and informative for me to guide some of my discussion or illustration, and I welcome that. And I will always reserve a time at the beginning and the end of our seminar for kind of an open mic for discussion. And in the lecture portion, I'm going to put us on lecture mode so there's not background noise. But if you'll manage background noise and stay muted, star six, until you're ready to talk with a larger number of people, I think it'll be really helpful. So just a couple of things in review. Besides welcome, and I'm excited about being with you, is you will see at the site you were sent that there's a download for an outline, an annotated outline of each of the four seminars so you can follow along without having to take a bunch of notes, and a resource guide with some exercises. And there's also the four ports where each of the recorded seminars will be posted for online playback, and you can fast forward past the discussion or just to an area that you want to hear again. So, would anyone like to introduce themselves and add to the mix here of answers to either of those questions? What do you find most challenging or want to most address and take away about this whole topic of change and transition? Now, the secret here that I'll tell you at the beginning, there's not one of your clients for whom what we're about to talk about will not apply. Each will undergo changes, transitions, and especially when they stick with you, you'll have the privilege of helping them navigate that. So when we talk about successful navigation of change and transition, mind, brain, and behavior strategies, we're going to be talking about incorporating the mind and brain sciences in understanding how to facilitate that to be significantly more effective and to help your clients deal with change and to create changes that last. And we'll talk about some specifics that are unique about that from what we know now in the mind and brain science. So, things that any one of you would like to add or ask or just comment about before we move into the presentation part?
Yes, my name is...
Would you start over, please, and introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Carol Ovenberg, and I live in Ashland, Oregon. And I call myself a narrative life coach because I'm really aware that we all carry stories around, and sometimes those stories get in the way of any kind of forward progress. So I've been coaching clients using this, and my question around this would be the most important question for me is how to use brain science effectively during coaching without going into teaching mode, teaching about narrative and brain science. You know, I know that there are sometimes you probably do need to do that, but I just, you know, that was what I thought I'd mention.
That's a great question, and I appreciate that. And you are definitely at the right place. And that's an excellent distinction about how we engage in a collaborative mode with our clients and not in a teaching mode. Because, you know, think about it. If information doesn't change minds, it's not the way we change people. If information were enough, we'd all have a lot of money saved up for the future, eat mostly vegetables, work out every day, and be really thin. And a lot of librarians would be billionaires. So information is not going to work. And you point that out at the beginning. So we can disabuse ourselves of that notion to start with. So it is about collaboratively creating a story, and that's really the entire metaphor that I use in my mentor coaching, is to co-create a new story, whatever that is, life, money, wellness, relationship, a number of things. So I think this is going to be really interesting, and I'll be interested to hear your input to how we elaborate within the idea of story here.
Great.
So thanks very much. Was there someone else who spoke in addition to Carol?
I did, yes. My name is Belinda. Hello.
Welcome. Hey. You're in
Thank
Texas,
you.
Belinda, is that right?
I actually am not in Texas. I am in the Caribbean.
Oh, okay. Well, you faked me out with a Texas email address.
Oh,
okay. Go
yes.
ahead with your question now.
Well, I am not prepared. I did not receive your emails, and after our special evening, I will go into Sam and
okay.
make sure they are there.
Okay.
Did you send out one email?
Yes, I sent it to myself and a blind copy to everyone in the class because I don't have permission to reveal that. So it would be to me, D. Kruger at MentorPath, and the subject line is coaching transitions, I think, or CTA coaching transitions. If you
All right.
have
I look for
any
that.
Difficulty with that, send me an email and I'll be sure that you're included. So any other
Hi,
questions?
Dave. This is Carolyn Hodgewest. How are you?
Welcome. How are you?
Welcome. Good to hear to be with you again.
Yeah.
I apologize. I'm traveling on a train and all my flights are delayed. But I did get an email. I did respond to it actually. So if I could ask that question, that would be great. And then the takeaway for me would be I'm looking to have an additional tool or two or three or four or five that I can add to my toolkit to help bring about sustainable transition for clients. So with that in mind, the first question I found really, really interesting, and I want to ask your opinion on it because that really was the question I asked back to you, which was I think of transition as the beginning rather than the end, the beginning of the new clarity, the new expansion, the new change, and the new expansion of the individual. So do you agree with that at all?
Well, I'm going to spend almost an entire seminar answering that question. I'm really talking about the change as more of the event, but the transition as the entire process.
Correct.
And a whole developmental process that we can recognize different markers or different aspects of it to be able to facilitate that with our clients in a much more effective way. So that's a great question. Hmm. And I think we'll spend some time addressing it. So, yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to apologize.
Make me envious. Where are you traveling on train?
Actually, I'm traveling from New York, and all of my flights, both going and coming, were all delayed. But I'm going to apologize. I'm going to spend a lot of time listening because I'm on a train and it's noisy.
Okay.
And I didn't bring my earplug. But.
Yeah, okay. All right, we'll see you.
But I just want to give you a heads up.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks. Any other questions?
And I just wanted to say, hi,
yes?
This is Jenny Patterson. I just wanted to say
Can you get a little closer to your microphone and start over?
Sure. This is Jenny Patterson. I'm in Acton, Massachusetts, and I just wanted to say hello.
Yeah,
also just opened the email, so I'm reading it now. So.
Okay.
So I will have an answer to those questions.
Okay, fire it away. It makes a difference, and it helps me to get an idea of the kinds of challenges, the kind of things that each of you are concerned about. Remember, once you're not talking, go back on mute, especially if you're on a cell phone or computer phone, because the teleconference technology is not caught up yet, and it we get technostatic. Any other comments or questions just briefly before we begin?
Well, you know, I coach a lot of women, and mostly women who have had kids and they're sort of stepping into, you know, going back to work and balancing that work-family piece. And so I find that there's just a lot of hesitation, and I wonder how to help people move through that a little bit more, you know, because it's always, like, about the kids, and I don't know how to help women make that shift so that it feels more exciting to them because they're doing something that's more what they want to be doing and also balancing the kids.
That's a great preparatory question because that's so much woven throughout what we'll be talking about. So, yes, you, I think you've really captured it about making a transition to an internal point of reference and about listening and developing that self-reflection internally. And then once doing that, how do you develop a coherent and cohesive story that can be consistently moving ahead to achieve goals? So, all right, so yes. I'm going to put us on lecture mode now, and I'll reserve some time at the end. So. Okay, we're going to talk in our first seminar about the dynamics and developmental stages of change and transition itself. First, consider this. When you want someone to know who you are, you probably share stories of your childhood, your family, what's important to you. When we know people well, we know their stories, what's important, what shaped and molded them, the trials and turning points that have tested them. Our own story is a significant organizer of our experience. It's a continuity of where we've been, where we are now, and will go. Stories define, orient, and guide us. We use stories in order to make sense of things, to understand, and as a way to remember. A good story is never more necessary than at a time of change and transition, a time that's unsettling, confusing, uncertain, maybe insecure. The ability to craft a good story at this crucial time is significant to the success of what follows. We learn through stories. We use stories to understand, to make sense of things, to remember. A good story bridges past and present to make sense of where we are, where we were, and the uncertain future. A critical element of our well-being is how we understand what happens to us and why. Some approaches derail because they attempt to change someone's behavior without considering what it does to their personal stories and especially to their identity. So let's look first at the dynamics of change. Now, remember, everything that's really important, at least an overview of it, is in your outline. So if you printed that, follow along with me and just listen and see what makes sense to you and how you incorporate it into your story and your coaching story. The change is the event, the situation. You move to a new city, divorce, retire, have a significant loss, take a new job, lose an old one, change careers. As we focus on change, we address the rituals of change, the work tools, the strategic goals. First, the idea of change will create anticipation. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, likely a trepidation, even an anxiety. Next, if you continue rather than return to your comfort zone, expansion into the new experience. Then, finally, mastery. Here are a couple of additional aspects of experiencing change that may seem paradoxical. Every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story, even one that doesn't work that well. This is a process. It's a developmental step. It's not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or even a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better, it's going to finally make it work. And secondly, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. This carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. So it's a kind of narcissistic injury to realize the way you've been doing things, if you've thought it's been great, that there really may be a better way. So I see at least six components in this dynamic of change. Now, these are not headlines. They're not signs that you can label, but these are for your reflection to think about as internal conceptual markers as you listen to the stories of your clients. One is the myth that there is a perfect choice. The illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems. The disappointment that nothing's really perfect. There isn't even an ultimate arbiter of fairness in adulthood. The development, the recognition that no one's going to take care of it for you. The scientific term for that is adulthood, of course. The growth, to take the next best action, which is all we ever have to do in life, is the next best thing. And finally, the consolidation, the happy-sad experience resulting. Happy about the effectiveness and mastery of creating something new and not constructing an obstacle and moving ahead. And sad about mourning the old story, even if it's one that you wanted to give up. Every transition begins with an ending, a change event, and we have to let go of the old before we can begin the new. Every beginning ends something. And as Agnes Allen, American writer, said, almost anything is easier to get into than out of. Changing to a better job or career may ironically cause a similar grief and confusion as the sad end of an important relationship in the past. The reason it's important to recognize this is that some of the feelings you experience today may have nothing to do with the present ending, but come from the resonance with similar situations in the past. Letting go is difficult. Herodotus, Greek historian, the 5th century B.C., said this, "Diseases always attack men when they are exposed to change." Even when we look forward to a change and anticipate it eagerly, some of us still hold on to what we used to be, and we wonder whether the change was a good or bad idea. We're defined, and maybe even define ourselves, by our roles and relationships, those we like, including the ones we don't like. Letting go is often an ambiguous experience. New skills are needed for negotiating passage, separating the old from the new. The usual ways of coping with endings need to be understood. Each person has his own or her own style of ending and new beginning, and people tend to respond to endings in their own typical way, to have characteristic reactions to ending and a similar kind of responsiveness. Let me give you some examples. Some of the most common styles of ending: abrupt, designed to deny the impact and the meaning of change; slow or gradual, so that it may be hard to see that anything important is really happening; external focus. Some people learn to cultivate a subtle way of covertly inviting people to act on them when change is inevitable. And the last, a dichotomy of active or passive, proactive or reactive. And people tend to respond in the same kind of attachment patterns to people in the present that they have in the past. Some people work to establish blamelessness in regard to endings. She just walked out on me. No warning, no nothing. She just left. Or like someone who immediately shouts, "I didn't do it," when the police arrive and calls attention to himself and makes everyone suspicious. Where do you think I got all these examples? How you approach change comes from the style you've developed for dealing with endings. The style is likely to reflect early experience as well as later influence and be consistent over time and situation. Typically, someone repeats a behavior pattern, as with other important losses. One person feels the grief and anxiety for the entire group, or another comforts the mourner, or another takes over the routine responsibility, or another assumes control for the situation, the kind of attachment patterns one often had in a family of origin. Also, although it's advantageous to understand your own style of endings, a part of you will resist that understanding with passion, and so will your clients. Now, we're not talking about just the big endings here, divorce, career change, job loss, children leaving for college, retirement. Even the small endings have their own personality that are consistent with the big endings. Think about how you tend to act at the end of an evening at a friend's house or after a night on the town. Do you drag things out by starting new activities and conversations when others seem to be ready to leave? Do you suddenly say it's a nice evening and abruptly dash out? Did you say goodbye to everyone or leave ahead of time that you planned so you could avoid the goodbyes? Notice how the small and large endings can be the same kind of patterns, leaving a job or moving from a neighborhood, as well as having dinner with friends. The person who leaves early and the one who stays late both avoid endings in their own way, as well as the discomfort of the disruption. A dasher and a lingerer share the same dynamic, just two sides of the same coin. There are things we don't want to happen but have to accept, things we don't want to know but have to learn, people we can't live without but have to let go. It's the ending that makes the beginning really possible. So here are some principles of letting go. There are 10 and counting. Accept the reality as well as the importance of the losses, of the meaning of the losses subjectively. Acknowledge the loss openly. Accept and expect overreaction. Overreaction comes because of the emotional impact of the loss as well as past experiences with similar losses. Expect and accept the process of grief and each of its stages, anger, bargaining, anxiety, sadness, then disorientation and confusion before a final acceptance. Compensate for the losses. Ask, what can I give back to balance what's been lost or taken away? Learn as much as possible about the loss in order to benefit from it. Define what's over and what isn't over. That's an important distinction. Mark the endings. Rather than just talking about the endings, create actions or activities that dramatize them. When Rene McPherson took over the leadership of Dana Corporation, he saw that operations were choked by a culture of rules that no one could remember. In his first management meeting, he piled all the company manuals on a table. They formed a stack almost 2 feet high. He then pushed them to the floor and held up a single piece of paper on which the corporate principles were typed. He said, "This is what we'll be doing. Treat the past with respect. Take a piece of the old story with you." We're going to come back to that. Endings ensure the continuity of what really matters, and the past, the good old days, will be idealized at times, nostalgically airbrushed and set on an ideal stage, denigrated at times. The changes anyone experiences are different than anything they have ever experienced before. The transition process by which people can get through change is a system that can have a map. So let's look now at the dynamics of transition, now that we've addressed some aspects of change. The change event is the snapshot. The change process is the wide-angle view. The transition is a time-lapse photograph. The transition of the process of the internal story of change is an entire shift in orientation. even self-definition and identity, and that's always the hardest part. Transition is awareness of the seasonal cycles while attending to the daily weather. As you respond to change and embrace transition, you let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve gradually into your new story. You transform a new identity to internalize the changes in order to sustain and enhance them. We're going to go through a deconstructed process of how to understand and change a story, to look at the algorithms that our brains work on to create and then to change stories in a later seminar. The transition story provides the coherence that will reassure in the present and foreshadow the future. The person you were yesterday is the person you are today and the person you will be tomorrow, only more so, evolvingly so. Yet, seemingly paradoxically, old stories need to be mourned and along with them the old self left behind. You also have your own characteristic way of a new beginning, just as with endings. Change and renewal seems to involve new relationships, but they can also involve new places or projects. For some, it may begin with a new state of mind, a new feeling, self-image, or a goal. Sometimes the beginning results from careful and conscious effort, but for many people, important new beginnings have a mysterious and sometimes seemingly accidental quality to them. Although we may think we take charge of our lives and plan carefully to start again after an ending, some of the most important beginnings take place in the unfocused darkness outside our awareness. Let me give you an example. And this occurred during my transition after doing an early retirement after 25 years of practicing psychiatry, psychoanalysis as clinical professor at Baylor and a trainer at the PsychoLink Institute. I went before, or as I was doing my coach training, I went to a writer's conference, an author's conference. And I was this was in Austin, and I was planning to leave on Saturday after the last conference meeting. I had just enough time to drive to my ranch between Austin and Houston to catch the sunset. Now, one of the measures of the quality of my life, one of the chief measures, by the way, is the number of sunsets. I'm at the ranch, usually on the weekend, on the porch with a cigar and single malt scotch, watching the sunset over a lake and trees. But for some unknown reason, I decided to stay for the social hour, a wine and cheese event. Nothing, by the way, to compare to any single malt scotch, never mind the cigar and the sunset. But there I met my future wife. 2 years later, we would marry on that porch I didn't get to that evening for sunset, at sunset with her children and mine attending. That was 15 years ago. Without a transition, change simply rearranges the furniture. People imagine that they can prepare for retirement by making specific changes, such as adequate financial preparation, a place to live, and developing new interests. But it's hugely different than that. I'll tell you some stories about my work and training in that regard at a later time. Yet the challenge is the transition, and change only prepares you for the transition. People have to let go of the outlived chapters of their life story and create a new one to replace it. And the outlived chapters of a business story to create a new one. At times, rituals and celebrations can further the process of transition as well as serve as markers. Every lifetime has its own unique rhythm, and the personal developmental steps for both change and transition deserve attention. Transition is a process and takes time. No matter how many people you put on the job, it still takes 9 months to have a baby. Now, I'm elaborating about this just to enhance the ways that you listen for change and transition in your clients, because every client you work with will have an issue with change and transition. Whenever they do something new, they are opposing the way the brain, their brain is wired and the way they've developed software to predictably know what's next. So it's going to be uncomfortable in every step, and we're going to look at that in more detail. So there are three components of transition. First, there's an ending. Then a neutral zone, an important, maybe directionless time in between, filled with mourning, with work, and with getting ready. Then you finish with a new beginning. Now, let's look at each of these stages specifically. Now, this is not something you want to try to fit a client into like a Procrustean bed, but these are just ways to think about the different aspects and to facilitate someone's story in the process. First is the ending. Every transition begins with an ending. Even though it sounds backwards, endings always come first. Willingly or unwillingly, an ending. So the first task is to let go. Whether at the individual or the organizational level, whether the source of transition is an external change or an internal development, the transition always starts with an ending. To start doing things a new way, you have to end the way you're doing them now. The most common mistake is to add a new pattern to the ones already existing. And you know from helping clients with change, the first thing to address change is to break the pattern, the existing pattern. And then the next, instead of focusing on the goal, is to focus on the system. We're going to talk more about both of those. Now, the impact of the transition doesn't necessarily bear a direct relationship to the importance of the change that triggered it. One person can be brought to an abrupt standstill by a divorce or job loss, and another person takes it in stride. Or someone else may come to terms with a debilitating illness, yet can be demolished by the loss of a pet. Here's one dramatic way to mark an ending. Spanish explorer Hernando Cortes came ashore with his men at Veracruz, and he knew that his men were extremely reluctant about the exploration ahead. They were scared and knew the danger. Some had called it hopeless. Faced with a continent full of unknown adversaries, each person in his party was ambivalent about moving ahead or turning back. So Cortes burned the ships. Here are some components of the ending process. There are essentially five aspects of an ending process. These are not in sequence or orderly or any way. They're just to think about. One is disengagement. Usual events disengage from the context and the identity in which people know themselves. Divorce, death, job change, move, illness. The disengagement itself begins a process of change. Dismantling. Old familiar behaviors and habitual practices are taken apart, a piece at a time. This gradual transition involves slowly unpacking the lost relationship or situation, including the lost identity that's part of it. An ending stops what used to be. It's not the old way anymore, but yet not the new way yet as this dismantling occurs. Now, remember, anybody can start with any one of these. These are not in any sequence. A third, disidentification. Ending connections with what used to be, you also may lose an old way of defining yourself. Old friends you didn't inherit in the divorce. Often people describe this phase as not being quite sure who they are. I thought about this loss a good deal when I came to terms with retiring from my practice and teaching of psychiatry and psychoanalysis to become a mentor coach. For 25 years of practice and 7 years prior to that of medical school and residency, I identified with being a doctor. I even wondered if using the MD after my name was a way of hanging on to that old identity, although I clearly knew I was no longer practicing. I made a wholesale transition and knew I would never return to it. The old identity can possibly stand in the way of transition as well as of transformation and self-renewal. Four, disenchantment. Now, coexisting with a still vivid picture of the way things are is the split-screen image of the way things were. Disenchantment is the discovery that, in some sense, your world indeed is simply no longer the way it used to be. Disenchantment is a recurrent experience through the lifetime of anyone who has the courage to trust and believe in the first place, to move ahead. Some significant transitions began with disenchantment, the loss of a job, the loss of a relationship. Listen for this possible distinction in your clients. The disenchanted person moves on, while the disillusioned person goes through the play again with new actors, always on a perpetual quest for the elusive, not letting go, but repeating. And five, disorientation. Disorientation affects a sense of space, place, and time. The usual way of structuring time changes. The future is unclear. These elements of ending, again, now are not in sequence or any particular order. For example, in a divorce, one partner may experience disidentification and disorientation and then decide to act, leading to disengagement. So if you're scoring that play, it's 3-5-1. The other partner, unaware of the impending change, begins and ending with disengagement and the challenge of disenchantment and then becomes disoriented. That's 1-4-5. There's no normal or natural order to this sequence, nor is there any normal order of reactions to an ending. Endings are the first rather than the last act of the play. Notice that only the first, disengagement, refers exclusively to external things. The second, dismantling, can be internal or external, but the last three, disidentification, disenchantment, disorientation, those are all internal. It's the internal things that hold us to the past, yet we often try to deal only with the external issues, to leave the relationship, the job, to move across the country. This focus uses change and action to avoid transition, to storm out of a job because of a bad boss, rather than discover what it is that keeps you finding and agreeing to work for such bosses, to end another relationship rather than letting go of the behaviors, beliefs, and attitudes that kept you choosing the same person and recreating the same relationships. Remember your friend from college who had numerous relationships, yet the dozens of faces were on the same woman or the same man? After someone struggles internally with the change and then begins to grapple with the transition, this is the true work, the beginning of the transformation. So the mid-phase, number two here, is the neutral zone. A resistance to transition is often not the problem of giving up a job or relationship or even an identity. The real problem is the time of nothingness that awakens the old fears, including even abandonment and death. People in transition will create new ways to return to the old story. Every ending is followed by some distress or confusion. We can expect this as part of a transition. Ending, confusion, new beginning. People will resist both the change and the transition. They will return to the familiar. So, we can reframe this return to the familiar as a way of measuring progress to see how far you've come, an opportunity to validate your commitment to move forward. And framing is so very important. For example, your brain does not know the difference between anxiety and excitement. It's how you frame it that determines whether you move ahead in seeing it as excitement and opportunity, or return to an old time frame and an old model and stop moving ahead by seeing it as danger and heading for cover. This in-between time of transition and transformation is the real work of letting go and prepares a foundation for the next stage. And it's important not to rush through this neutral zone too quickly in order to avoid or minimize the disruption. this is a very important time for a work in progress. When I went through my career transition, I needed a time in between before I began my new career. I knew that I was had been a medical professional in my mind and heart, and I would be tempted, I thought, to revert to that identity and style of being if in doubt about my new endeavor. This is why I made a wholesale transition to retire completely from my medical practice and close that out in every way, then to spend some time at my ranch riding and physically working before I began training for certification as a professional coach. In another era, the person in transition left the village and went to a forest or desert to remain for a time. Removed from old connections and without old identities, the old reality changed as well. This in-between time of empty space fostered a generation of a new sense of self. So actually, mine was way closer to caveman than I realized. When someone doesn't allow this essential period of time to create a transition, some important work is avoided. If transition is treated as an event like crossing the street, a necessary process is averted. Often someone, without even knowing why, finds ways of being alone and away from familiar distraction. Sometimes it's just a long weekend alone in a quiet place. Having the time to think things over and not do much of anything is the point. One of the significant transitions in work life is an internal one. It's likely that someone after the age of 40, people transition from being motivated by the chance to demonstrate competence to being motivated by the chance to find personal meaning in work and its results. This is a shift from the question of how to the question of why. Competence begins to lose its force as a source of motivation. To do the same thing over and over becomes less challenging, less invigorating. Now, the brain also plays a role in this process. Dopamine is the brain chemical that induces excitement by anticipating pleasure or reward. This pleasure from dopamine release motivates people to take risks, to want to do new things, to ask what's next. And neuroscientists have shown that anticipating a reward is even more exciting than actually receiving it, because receiving a reward shuts down this anticipatory release of dopamine and those positive feelings and high energy to another system entirely, mediated by norepinephrine. It's the chemical system of marathons, not sprints. So this explains the paradox that the experience, or maybe just the expectation of an event, can be more exciting than the actual event. Have you had that experience? This has been demonstrated in different arenas. An investor will feel more positive when expecting a stock to rise, not feel as excited when it actually does rise. A big ticket item, a new car that you've been anticipating for a long time, isn't as exciting as you expected it to be. This can be read as buyer's remorse, but it's simply the shift of one neurochemical system to another. Now, clients also hit plateaus in coaching after maybe a month or two, and consider suspending work. So what we can do then is to help them ladder success, to look at laddering challenges and successes, to always look at what's next, and to do that in a stepwise and systematic way. Now, two questions to focus on the meaning of transition at a particular time in life. What is it time to let go of in your life right now? Transition starts with letting go. An important distinction between change and transition is that change is focused on reaching a goal, and transition began with letting go of what no longer fits the life stage you're in. And each person has to figure out what no longer fits. And it's usually internal rather than external. The transition begins with letting go of something you've assumed or believed, some way you've always seen yourself, some world outlook or attitude toward others. The second question, what is waiting to make its entrance into your life? The answer is usually something internal, something subjective, maybe an idea or a question you ask yourself, like a message to you, a message that something is standing just outside the door of everyday awareness, waiting for your attention. Now, we have to deal with endings all of our lives, yet curiously, we often handle them poorly. We either take them too seriously by confusing them with finality or see them as something without sequel, forgetting that we're simply in the first phase of a transition process, a prerequisite for self-renewal. So at the same time we may fail to take them seriously enough because they scare us, we may try to avoid it. Now, I saw this in my therapy and analytic practice. It's not the loss of someone that creates problems, but the failure to internalize that person and relationship. For some, their present consists at least in part of a past they haven't let go of. Here's an illustration of the emptiness in this neutral zone in Leo Tolstoy's description. I felt that something had broken within me on which my life had always rested, that I had nothing left to hold on to, and that morally my life had stopped, and yet I could give no reasonable meaning to any action of my life. And I was surprised that I had not understood this from the beginning. My state of mind was as if some wicked and stupid jest was being played upon me by someone. I asked myself, what will be the outcome of what I do today? What shall I do tomorrow? What will be the outcome of my life? Why should I live? Why should I do anything? The reasons for this emptiness between the old life and the new include: the process of transformation is simply a death and rebirth process rather than a mechanical modification. And the process of disengagement and reintegration is the source of renewal, the way an apple tree needs the cold of winter. The emptiness between the stages of life journey provides a perspective on the stages themselves. This is in between time, and it provides access to a view, a perspective that can occur nowhere else. So here's just a brief overview summary of the creative use of this neutral zone, this mid-phase. Embrace setbacks. Losses and disadvantages are entry points to new solutions. Establish a regular time and place to be alone, to step back, to take stock, to question the usual, to come up with new and creative solutions. Provide opportunities for others important in your change and transition to step back and renew and review as well. Accept your need for this time in the neutral zone. Engage, perhaps, in training and techniques of discovery and innovation. A catalyst. This is the time that your clients will especially need you as a catalyst for this process. Become informed about the change and transition process, what you are doing just now, and how you will help your clients do it. Take this opportunity to discover what you really want. Engage in experimentation. Try out new ideas you wished you'd had the chance to try. After I closed my practice, I considered using my experience as a founder and CEO of a couple of healthcare corporations and involvement with a startup with partners that went through venture capital to really enter the corporate world and become an executive. Now, thankfully, that lasted about 25 seconds. 7, keep a log of neutral zone experiences. This is not dissimilar from a diary. Take a pause in the action of your life to perhaps write an autobiography. This is a part of getting things in an output channel. This completes the circuit in the brain. Think of what would be unlived in your life if it ended today. And lastly, reflect consciously on the present transition experience in your own life. This neutral zone, this time between the old and the new, is a rich time for insight. And finally, the last phase, you finish with a new beginning. A new beginning follows the ending, and the new beginning involves changing how you see yourself, even aspects of your identity. We're going to talk about how to systematically do this in a subsequent seminar. It's when the endings are finished that we can truly begin. The end allows a new beginning. We may not always know when the ending is complete and when we've been in the neutral zone long enough, especially when the path is genuinely new. We haven't been there before. For a time, we may not even know which is the real path. Think about the important beginnings in your own past. You bumped into a friend you hadn't seen for years, and he told you about a job at his company that opened up that morning. You met your spouse to be at a party that you hadn't planned to go to and almost skipped. You picked up a book that changed your life because there was only one lying on the friend's coffee table when you dropped by for an unexpected visit. The lesson in these experiences is that when we are ready to make a new beginning, we will find or create an opportunity. When you're ready to learn, a teacher will appear. There will be a wine and cheese event. New beginnings often occur with an internal realignment rather than an external shift. When we are aligned to our deep longings, our needs and ideals align with our strategies and goals. We embrace our purpose. Each step forward will set off an inner warning system. The brain's error detection mechanism reads that something is wrong when we don't do the usual thing, the habitual default mode. This is not a signal to retreat to an old way of doing things. Never underestimate the change back pressure from the system, your family, your company. It's their self-statement of reaction to change. They each have an error detection mechanism in their brains too. An attempt benevolently to restore normal order and not do the work of change. They're not trying to get you. They're responding naturally to how their minds and brains work. A group or a system has a status quo bias and inertia as well as an individual. And Jung said, the most important problems can't be solved. They have to be outgrown, outlived. The important distinction is this. Have you really moved through the endings and the neutral zone to find the beginning you now want to follow? Or is this beginning a way of avoiding an ending and aborting or short-circuiting the neutral zone experience because it's not comfortable? It's like wandering in the wilderness. One thing you can do is to begin to identify yourself with the final result of the new beginning. What's it going to feel like when you've actually done what you're setting out to do? That is, after all, what motivates us to do something, is how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. So look ahead. What will you be glad you've done a year from now, 5 years from now? We understandably have ambivalence about new beginnings. We've not established a comfort zone yet, not grooved a default mode in our minds and brains. We don't know the outcome. So beginnings may reactivate some old anxieties as well as making it very real that the ending has happened. The risk and uncertainty of the new beginning will resonate with past anxiety, perhaps even trigger old memories, even of failures. And a new beginning will erode the equilibrium of the neutral zone. For example, one of the most challenging aspects of being an adult and taking care of ourselves is that we have to come to the end of the past, the hope that someone else will do it for us. And it's more difficult to let go of what never was, even that which was traumatically so, because you have to give up hope of ever having it in exactly the way you wanted it. And with it, the illusion that there's an ultimate arbiter of fairness. New beginnings need to have a clear idea of purpose. To reinforce a new beginning, you'll have to evolve a new identity that replaces the old one. In the beginning, take things step by step. Recognize the assumption and resist the attempt that some other route would go smoothly, with things always exciting and meaningful. It's like comparing your inside to somebody else's outside. It's never an apples-to-apples comparison. It's important in a new beginning not to be preoccupied with results. Focus on the system. For example, rather than each interview that does not produce a job being a failure and everything that happened being a mistake, reframe the process as an activity where each interview teaches you something, creates a new contact, deepens an understanding of the process and of yourself. This is an important aspect of a new beginning, to shift your purpose from the goal to the process of reaching the goal. For example, the new job is to find a job. Every transition is a transition from something into something. Each of these transitions corresponds to internal changes and integration of a new identity with elements of the old one. There are many endings, many little beginnings, emptiness and creation in between. So, here are some considerations to reinforce the new beginning. Be consistent. The best way to get an idea of how something will work is to be consistent and totally immersed in the process. Shrink the change to ensure the stepwise successes. Always evolve a new identity and celebrate small successes. So, I want to end with a question and a challenge. The question: imagine a photograph of yourself 100 years from now. Close your eyes and take a deep breath and picture a photograph of yourself 100 years from now. What is the story you most want your great-grandchildren to tell about you? And here's the challenge. Keep your eyes closed, another deep breath, to breathe in relaxation and breathe out any tension. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles you're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories about your favorite sports team or what great cookies you used to bake. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. Gradually, open your eyes. I'm going to put us... discussion mode. I plan to have much more time, but any thoughts or comments right now? Once we get to, please feel free to email them to me, and we'll begin there next time. Thoughts or comments or questions?
I appreciate the exercise, Dave. That was really great. This is Carolyn. Sorry. I really enjoyed taking a minute to close my eyes and really see what I want to see.
You know, I did with a buddy a retreat called What's Next Expect for people who were in their last year before retirement as CEO or business owner. We did a retreat at his ranch, and over 2.5 days, we did a whole lot of work and a whole workshop, and over 80% of the people gave feedback that there was one question that I asked them that had the most measurable impact of anything that we had talked about or done or any activity the entire time. It was when I asked them to sit very quietly, close their eyes, to do the deep breath, and to immediately write down the answer to this question. And doing that means they bypass... They move immediately into an emotional response and don't, you know, move it to what's logical and conscious and thinking about it and all the system two and the secondary process. Ask them to write down the immediate answer. And the question was, what is your unlived life? And these people who are icons of success in the world's eyes in any measure that you could possibly. They were astonished to recognize what their unlived life was for each of them. Some of them were even brave enough to talk about it. Many said, I just can't talk about it yet. But it was this question, this kind of reflection. And this is really all we're talking about doing here is to develop self-reflection with your clients. And these are all ways just to think about informing that self-reflection. Because everyone's story will be different. Everyone will have their own point of reference and develop their story. You'll co-create it with them. And it will be their story uniquely told, but there are principles. And as we'll talk further later, there are ways to understand the algorithms of how our brains work to construct these stories and to revise or create new ones. So just briefly in our last minute, any thoughts or questions or additional comments? And again, if you're not going to comment, please remain on mute because there's some techno static that you're not hearing probably. Any other thoughts or comments or questions?
David,
really
Sorry. Go ahead.
Mine is a really short one. Just, I was really curious, when you transitioned from your psychiatry practice into coaching, how long was your neutral zone?
How long was what?
Your neutral zone?
At my ranch, it was weekends. It was the time that I used to do training. So it was about 6 months.
Thank
now,
you.
I was referred clients by my mentor coach, and I had that parallel, my time in training, so I had to jump into it a little sooner than I really wanted to. But, you know, it's variable for each person. It's a process that fits into a container of time only retrospectively. So that's the best answer I can give, but just listen for the process. With your clients and help them engage that process from an internal point of reference. There was another question that I didn't hear. A guy, would you ask that now? I'll try to be brief.
Yeah, this is Michael. Hi.
Hey, welcome.
Hi, David. You don't have to answer this now. I just, at some point, you talk about story a lot and how to create a story, and I'm interested in how story relates to transitions, like how you end one story and begin another story and what that actually means, if that makes sense. I can,
That's a good and a very understandable question, and we will address that as we look at how to understand and revise and change or even create a new story. And, you know, looking at endings and beginning are really a certain vantage point that is not from the experience of the client, but it's really from our vantage point for discussion. And remember this, too, and it's a great question for another reason. Remember that our clients do not experience what they're going through as a story. That's our metaphor. What they're experiencing is reality. That's their life. We're talking about it as a story to give us some perspective and purchase and a way of conceptualizing how to go about being a catalyst for change for that story. But we're going to come back to that because it's a very, very important question. So thanks for all of your energy, attention, the emails I've got, fire off other ones that you have. I really look forward to continuing this. Same time next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.